Hi, welcome to this Physicians Weekly's podcast. My name is Dr. Rachel Giles. I'm your host for this podcast, and today we've got some great interviews as usual.
This is Physicians Weekly.
This week's episode is brought to you by Microsoft and Nuance, who are committed to helping physicians restore the joy of practicing medicine. DAX Copilot is an AI-powered solution that automates clinical documentation directly in the EHR. Discover how you can get back to what you are trained and love to do, care for patients. Visit nuance.com/physiciansweekly to learn more. That's nuance.com/physiciansweekly. Today, we're joined by Dr. Dyke Drummond, a regular contributor from the Happy MD, who brings a wealth of knowledge and experience in preventing physician burnout through innovative strategies and leadership principles. In our discussion today, Dr. Drummond will explore the concept of leadership power tools, one of the 7 healthy habits for doctors to maintain well-being and stave off burnout. These tools are not just about managing teams, but also about managing oneself in the high-stakes environment of healthcare. We'll also look at so-called servant leadership, which is a style that emphasizes the growth, well-being, and empowerment of employees. Dr. Drummond will share insights into how this approach can create an inclusive environment where everyone can thrive authentically. As part of that, we'll discuss the importance of leading by asking questions. Additionally, our conversation will touch on innovative healthcare models like direct primary care, or DPC, and concierge medical practice, which are reshaping patient care and physician job satisfaction. Enjoy listening. Welcome, everyone. I'm back here today with our regular contributor, Dyke Drummond, and you're the Happy MD. Dyke, you want to introduce yourself in 2 sentences, please?
Wahoo! Dyke Drummond, CEO of thehappymd.com. I'm a family doc by training, and I've been 100% focused on helping individual doctors and organizations prevent burnout since I launched thehappymd.com back in 2010.
Now, Dyke, you've been here several times and we've covered some things, but there's still so much more to go.
Right.
And you talked about before in our last episode, we recapped on how you take that perfect job description and sort of try and get yourself into it. You review it. You have your first 90 days that are very important. You learn how to manage your boss. What are some of the next steps?
Well, and let me just take you through the progression. So on my website, you can book a discovery session, which is with no obligation, no cost, totally confidential. We're going to have a conversation about the situation that you're in. And the people who come to me have already crossed a whole bunch of inner psychological barriers just to make the phone call.
Yeah.
Because so often, because of our never show weakness programming, one of the prime directives that we absorb in our education process, never do anything to make anybody think you haven't got what it takes.
Yeah.
To admit that you're struggling and to ask for help and to actually talk to a coach that you would have to pay money to in order to support you, there's a whole bunch of barriers inside, psychological barriers inside that you've crossed through. So they're usually pretty nervous. Some people are ashamed, feeling guilty, wondering if there is something wrong with them. And they want to talk to me about all the things that are going wrong, all the things they want to avoid. And what I have to do is say, stop. I know what you want to tell me, all the things you want to avoid and run away from. But in order for us to get you what you want, we have to actually do a 180. And I'm going to do something I've done on the program before. If you're watching on video, you can avoid everything you don't want and you still won't get what you want. Because the only way to get what you want is to figure out what that is and go get it. Now, we call that the ideal job description. Ideal job description is something you sit down and write down. In an ideal world, what kind of patients would you be seeing? Doing what kind of things for what kind of hours and what kind of pay on what kind of team, where in the world? And if you want to look at it from a different viewpoint, your ideal job description is your definition of how to win. How to win your career, HTW. And once you've figured out what your how to win is, what your formula for success is, what if you had it, you would be satisfied and fulfilled in your career. That's what we're pointing at.
Right.
A career that's fulfilling. Not just one that doesn't burn you out, a career that's actually fulfilling and satisfying. And it gives you the sense of purpose that you were looking for when you chose to go to medical school in the first place.
And a career that puts your practice central, right? I think that's something that a lot of people forget about.
And let's just differentiate practice, job, career, life, okay? Practice is what you do when the door is closed and the curtain is pulled and you're with the patient working your magic. Job is everything that surrounds that and gets in your way on the way to the one-on-one with the patient. And these days, you spend twice as much time wrestling with your job as you do working with the patient. Twice as much time just in EMR as face-to-face patient care hours.
We have high hopes for AI here.
Well, and I can report out on a couple of them that seem to be getting traction in my network of caregivers. They've tried them and they're saying, oh my God, it's awesome, right? So what ends up happening once you have your ideal job description is you do this little Venn diagram. I've talked about this Venn diagram before. It's a Venn diagram of feeling. You know what your current job feels like.
Yeah.
And you can imagine what your ideal job feels like. How much overlap does it feel like there is between the two right now? And you can do that right now, even if you haven't got a fully fleshed out ideal job description. 50 or less feels bad. 60 or greater feels pretty good. And if you're an employee, physician, you'll never get 100. Because you're building your practice in a place that is not focused
right.
on quality practice. You're building your practice in a construct, a bureaucracy, where every single aspect of the bureaucracy is meant to extract as much resources and money out of everything it touches as humanly possible. It's built to maximize return on investment for the stakeholders. It's not built for you to have a happy practice. So you're playing a game of compromise. That's why it's really important that you know how to win. What's your ideal job description? Then what you do is you make a list of the yeah. things that you would need to change to increase the overlap on this circle. That's called your master plan. And then, because burnout's not a problem, there is no solution, there is no magic bullet, there is no cure-all snake oil, you're going to build a strategy. What's the difference between solution and strategy? The number of steps. So you're going to probably do, the people who come to me burned out,
right.
then overlap of 20%, over the course of 6 to 9 months, they're going to try 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 different things, usually 3 to 5 things, new habits that are going to bring their energy level up and bring them back up out of burnout. 70% of the time they can do that without changing jobs. The 30% of people who have to change a job usually have a conflict with their boss. Absent boss, incompetent boss, psychopath boss, right? And when it comes to psychopath boss, we try to recognize those as quickly as possible and get my person out of there. Now, if you know how to win that ideal job description, that's what you use in your job search if you need to leave. It's the bullseye and the target that you're aiming at, right?
Right.
Now, if you're going to stay in place, you're not in any danger. They're not asking you to do anything dangerous or illegal. And sometimes they do. Sometimes we have to bail with our clients because there's just really nefarious stuff going on there. If your boss isn't a psychopath, as you begin to build your strategy, what you're going to realize is you don't know how. And the reason is in med school and residency,
we were never taught
they
this.
Taught you how to be, just listen real quick. They taught you how to be a good med student and a good resident. What does a good resident do? What they're told. You have no wiggle room. It's like there's a train track and you're a little train. Now, trains can leave the track, but what do they call that? A disaster, okay? So a derailment, chemicals and fire and all that kind of stuff, right? So what you do as a resident is exactly what you're told. Yes, sir. No, sir. 3 bags full, sir.
Right.
You work hard, take on a little extra responsibility as long as everybody's watching and noticing that you're taking on extra. But you learn how to be a good resident, follow the rules. When you go and get a job, you interview for a job, think about it. You're interviewing for a position. They pull out a job description. Did you play any role in that job description? Did you do any contribution to the structure of that job description? No, it's boilerplate right out of a rack behind your interviewer, right? So what's happening is you're going from being a resident where they tell you what to do to being an employee where they tell you what to do. What are the odds that that job description is aimed right at your ideal job description? Zero. So inevitably, if you are a good resident and you work really hard and color inside the lines of their job description, you will burn out. It's inevitable. And right now, the state is so horrifying. 63% of American doctors are suffering from at least one symptom of burnout today. It's more common to be burned out than not. Insane. Shameful. Only in the FUBAR world of American healthcare.
Absolutely.
But when you say to yourself, okay, I've got my ideal job description. I know the changes I want to make. I'm going to stay an employee. So I'm going to try and do this in hostile territory. you'll find that the skills that you need in order to pull the Venn diagram in more overlap are things you were never taught. And they actually, in our experience, and I've been doing this for 14 years, I've trained 40,000 doctors in these techniques. They fall into seven groups. And I've actually stolen from Stephen Covey and call them the seven habits of physician well-being, right? One of them that we've talked about is this, this habit of focusing on your ideal practice and working a strategy to work it. So strategy, that's an important tool. Strategy, having a target, ideal practice, how to win. That's an important piece.
It is, yeah.
So I call it the ideal practice generator process. Ideal practice description, Venn of happiness, master plan, take a new action. That's the generator. And then if you think about what you need to do to pull yourself back into energy balance, there's a whole set of tools about how to get home sooner. These are all practice efficiency tools. There's a whole bunch of tools around balance and boundaries. Again, right. You were never taught this in residency. They'd blow your boundaries right away, right? Eye of the storm. Eye of the storm. What do you do when the shit's hitting the fan to stay calm, centered, focused, and maybe even happy, no matter what's going on around you? Now, some people have a natural gift for this. So if you look at a good ER doc or a good surgeon, when things get hairy, everything slows down for them. They get calmer and calmer and more focused. They get in the flow, right? And all of us yearn for the flow of patient care, of having a day where most of what you do is talk to patients and you're in the flow of the communication and everything. I mean, sometimes as a coach and as a doctor, I've had experiences of flow where I felt like I was channeling something to the patient. I was doing something that was outside my body and it was magic. And I hope that, dear listener, perhaps you've had that experience when you were caring for patients before. It's never when you're in the EMR, okay? It's when you're in the room and the doors closed, the curtains fold, right? All that kind of stuff. So get home sooner, balance and boundaries, eye of the storm, ideal practice generator, leadership power tools, how to manage your boss, which you talked about last time. And then we have built, based on the ideal practice description, the ideal physician job search formula if you need to find another job. There's your seven.
Excellent.
And you will typically need to choose from three or four of those toolkits. And what I'll tell you is, it doesn't take much to make a big difference. So one of the things we do with our clients when they say, hey, I think we're done with coaching, I'm feeling pretty good. And I ask them, well, what's your overlap in the Venn diagram? They usually say something up around 70.
Wow.
That's the standard we hold them to when they're finding a new job. They should never take a job offer unless they can assure themselves that it's at least a 70% match for their ideal job. And they've been able to interview the leaders that will be their bosses, right?
Right.
And in the ideal physician job search formula, which is an online video training that we have, it's magic because every single person who's followed by interviewing protocol, every single person, every single time in every single interview has got a job offer. But you know what? That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether they want you.
No, not so much. It's whether you want them.
Notice, this is recovering from being a resident. Doctors' seminal experience of finding a job is when they got into medical school or got into residency. And then in that situation, all they were doing was pick me, pick me, pick me. All that mattered was that they pick you. And so if you make that mistake when you're doing a job search after you've graduated, oh man, they want me. They're giving me a job offer. I should take it. Bull. What's the match with your ideal job description? That's the thing that determines whether you want them and that you take the job. But getting a job offer is easy, especially these days. So let's talk just a little bit. Let's pick one of the groups. So we've talked about ideal practice generator and manage your boss.
We have.
Which one do you want to pick?
Leadership power tools.
Leadership power tools. Okay, great. So physicians learn, they're not taught, but they learn a leadership paradigm that sucks unless you're in a clinical setting where you as the doctor are the sole repository of the knowledge that can help the patient. You figure out what's going on and you tell other people what to do and they follow your orders. That's a top-down leadership paradigm that you're never taught. I've never met a doctor ever who took a leadership class in medical school. You're not taught it. you absorb it. And I can remember when I absorbed my diagnose and treat, give orders and expect obedience and compliance, I learned that paradigm. I was a fourth year medical student at Mayo. And at Mayo, the teams, I think I was on a cardiology rotation. The teams are attending, chief, resident, two residents, intern, medical student. And as part of your senior year rotations, you would get a patient or two while you were on that rotation for a month. And you would have to work them up and present them to the team.
Right.
So I worked this guy up, and usually it's a bloodbath, right? Well, I worked this guy up, and I was able to present, and there wasn't a lot of pokey questions, and I think I did a pretty good job. And everybody walked out of the room, leaving me and the intern standing there. And I thought I was done. I worked him up. I presented him. The intern says, "Aren't you going to write the orders?" I said, "What are you talking about?" "Right, you know, write orders." And he looks over at the charge nurse behind the counter. Charge nurse is a battle axe nun. We're in St. Mary's. And she's looking at me with her arms crossed like, not another medical student, right? And I still didn't know what he was talking about. So he walked me behind the counter into the nurse's station, and he pulled out one of those duplicate yellow things. And at the top of the page, what did it say? Doctor's orders. Now notice, nobody on your team can do anything until you give them an order. Notice the power dynamic in this.
Sure.
And what is the nurse supposed to do with your order? She's supposed to, starts with an O.
Obey.
Obey. What is the patient supposed to do? Starts with a C.
Comply.
Comply. And if the patient doesn't comply with my order, they are non-compliant and a bad patient. That's a horrible leadership paradigm, especially since once you're out in practice, the majority of your time, you are not going to be asked what to do about a clinical setting, because you know what to do in a clinical setting, and everybody knows the rules about how it works in a clinical setting. You're going to come out of the room and somebody's going to ask you a question about how the practice functions. Where should I put this op report? It's all these questions that don't have anything to do with your clinical expertise.
Right.
And if you think you're supposed to know what to do and you're supposed to give orders and everybody's going to sit around and wait for you to give them orders, it's all going to fall apart. It's just horrible. Doctors are naturally terrible leaders. And the only time actually giving orders and having people obey really works is on a code. And even then, the doctor who's running the code, if they're a good code runner, is going to be open to feedback from members of the team about what's going on. I can't feel a pulse down here. It's like, oh, thanks for telling me. As opposed to, shut up, I'm running this code, right? So what needs to happen is we need to have one leadership paradigm for clinical issues. And I would encourage you to open it up, to be open to team input rather than feeling like you have to run the show. I am the repository of all the knowledge, and I'll tell you what to do. And don't you flinch until I tell you. That's horrible. Even in clinical settings, that's a horrible leadership paradigm. But once you're working with your team, let's say you're in your monthly staff meeting and you're asking about how to make things better, right? You have to learn a different skill set. And I'm going to categorize it broadly as servant leadership. What do I mean by servant leadership? Leading by asking questions. Leading by asking questions, because here's the key. As a team leader, you want your team to be engaged in the process of developing the way that they work together. You want to tap everyone's skills and experience in designing the way you work together, everyone's. And you are the least qualified person to tell people what to do, unless it's a clinical setting, right? Unless you're a surgeon to say scalpel. Well, you were pretty qualified to ask for that scalpel, okay? Because you know what you're going to do with it. But otherwise, you're out to lunch. You know the least about what's going on in your practice outside the room when you're with patients. You don't know what's going on out there. And that's where the questions will always come from. They'll still see you as the authority, the leader for those questions.
Right.
And if I say, I'm going to figure this out and I'm going to tell you what to do, I've taken all my team's skills and experience and thrown it in the trash can. I haven't made any attempt to get the best answer to the question that faces us. And the questions you have to ask are ones that are open-ended. Now, most people are sick and tired of hearing the phrase open-ended questions. But how do you make an open-ended question? What two words can you start your question with that guarantees it'll be open-ended? what is the best, how is number two, and technically why is an open-ended question, but it's almost impossible to use why without being snarky. Why did you do that? So just avoid why, what and how. And most of the time, you can take almost anything you would give as an order and switch out what or how for the first word, and it turns into an open-ended question. So it's like this. Dr. Smith, what should we do with these op reports that keep getting lost? Dr. Smith says, put it on the agenda for the next staff meeting, which is a lunchtime meeting once a month, stuff like that. Dr. Smith, you said we were going to work on this op report thing. Dr. Smith, if they're stuck in their leadership paradigm, would have been noodling on this all week long, and they would say, here's what we're going to do. Do this. Everybody goes, yes, sir. And it's totally screwed. It totally makes everything worse because the doctor hasn't even bothered to ask the people who are outside trying to file these things what they recommend. And everybody has been turned into sheep. Nobody in that office does anything until the doctor tells them to. They just sit there and go, meh, eh, 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 meh, eh, right? So ideally, here's what happens. Now, I'm going to throw three or four different leadership power tools in here. Hey, everybody. Thanks for being here at the staff meeting.
Okay.
Everybody take a great big deep breath and let go of anything that doesn't need to be here right now. Now, one of the things I love about this staff meeting is we can take some time out of our practice. We can take some time to work on the practice rather than just in it. So thanks for being here. Thanks for taking a big breath. And one of the issues we wanted to deal with was what to do with these op reports. How do you suggest we deal with them? Who's got some ideas?
Right.
Now, some doctors, when they ask questions like that of their staff, feel like weak, like there's something wrong with them. What's wrong with me that I can't give an order here? You're actually going to now mine for the best answer to that question. And Sheila says, let's do this. And April says, let's do that.
Right.
And Mark pipes up with, yeah, but if we do this, it's going to be cross-filed and we won't be able to access it either. And you help the team come to a decision about an action plan, a strategy. A strategy, because let's talk about filing op reports.
Right.
Is that a problem you can fix? It could be, depending on the way your system's set up, but it's most likely a dilemma that needs a strategy because different things are handled in different ways and flexibility is often important. But I'm going to stick as the doctor to, how would that work? What do we do next? Notice the first words of everything I'm saying. And who needs to know about that before we can get to the end? Okay, great. So here's the steps as I see them. Everybody take a look. How's it feel? How's it look? How many of you can live with and support this as our new process of notice I'm not using Robert's Rules of Order. How many of you can live with and support this new process for dealing with the op reports? Anybody not? I've got consensus. That's called consensus. And we run it. And if somebody in the back of the room says, I can't support it, here's how I deal with that. For those of you who are sweating bullets because I said, don't use Robert's Rules of Order, I can't live with the support. I say, well, Chuck, hang on a second. What would we need to do so that you could live with it and support it? And Chuck says, we need to check how this is working in a couple of weeks to make sure we don't go off the rails. So I go, okay, everybody, how many of you can live with and support this process if we check in 2 weeks to make sure we're not going off the rails? Anybody not? Now I've got unanimity and we got a failsafe, right? By the way, one of the things, this is another leadership power tool. One of the things I would have the group agree upon
right
before we're done is how do we measure this? And how do we know we're successful? What's the metric? Now, again, you have to protect your servant leadership skill set because you may get to the end of the meeting and somebody smart on your team says, how are we going to measure this, Dr. Drummond? And if you get dreamed up back into your leadership role, you're going to figure it out and tell them what to measure. And no, you can't do that. It's their process. Ask the question. How would you ask a question about metrics to your team? Come on, Rachel, what would you ask?
I would probably say, how are we going to know this is successful? How are we going to be able to look back at this in a month and be able to say we solved that problem?
What's the metric? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So what ends up happening is instead of sitting in your office trying to figure out what to tell your people, all you have to do as a servant leader, you do not need any answers. All you need is two good questions to start the process. So
pretty easy.
So it's like, okay, great. So here's leadership. This is true leadership that will always get your team engaged from the beginning because you're asking them, and it'll come up with the best answer based on everybody's skills and experience on your team.
Absolutely.
We've got this process we're trying to figure out about what to do with op reports. Here is stellar leadership from even the most qualified doctor. Hey, everybody, thanks for being at the meeting. Take a big breath. Let's go. Anything done to be here? Right on. So what do you want to do about these op reports? I'm done. All I have to do is create an environment on my team that where there's enough trust that they're willing to participate in the conversation. But what happens when you're a typical command and control doctor is everybody walks into the medical staff meeting, they're trying to keep their head down.
Right. They're used to saying, this is what's going to happen to the op reports.
You're going to do this. Yes, sir. No, sir. Three bags full, sir. So that's just one of the leadership power tools. Lead by asking questions. And you have to recognize when the situation calls for a different role that you're playing. So clinical role, I have my doctor hat on. I do diagnose. I do give orders. The team does treat. But if I'm in an administrative role, I take my doctor hat off. I put my team leader hat on, switch into a servant leadership skill set, asking questions. And all of a sudden, things continue to be well run. But if I take that doctor hat into a management setting, it just messes everything up. And by the way, this is how doctors really screw up when they're in mixed meetings with administrators and managers, and they're trying to tell everybody what to do from the administrative side. It's like, God, he's a bull in a china shop. And,
right? That's classic.
And we even know that from the work on First Break All the Rules and the Gallup questions, we even know that there's a critical frequency for saying thank you that will drive the performance of your team.
Thank you.
Ideally, the leader says thank you to everyone on their team at least once a
day.
Everybody says that because they're paranoid. No, it's not every day. It's once a week.
I like to be told thank you a lot.
Maybe, but then it begins to lose its meaning if it's rote.
True.
Right? So when you say thank you, you want to say thank you for something specific. Hey, Rachel, I just wanted to stop and say thank you so much on behalf of the team and me, both of us. Thank you so much for what you did with that patient who was upset in the waiting room yesterday. It was really awesome how you calmed him down. It's a pleasure having you on the team. That has meaning. Because I thanked you for a specific thing and you felt that it was sincere for me. As opposed to thanks, every day, thanks, every day, thanks, every day, thanks, that loses meaning completely. So once a week, make it work. But right now, what I'll tell you is when you're a member of a team that's not the doctor, nothing has a more positive impact on your day than being told thank you from either the patient or from any one of your team members. So you, as the leader of the team, have the ability to make your people's day by saying an authentic thank you. Now, don't put a spreadsheet of your team together and say, oh, it's been 6.5 days since I said thank you to Rachel. I got to get that 7 days. I can't violate the 7-day boundary, right? But saying thank you is a leadership power tool. And in healthcare, almost never happens.
It is. And it certainly gives energy. We talked about that before, about when you receive a thank you, you have to stop and, I'm sorry, could you just say that again?
That's what to do when a patient says thank you. Yeah. So if a patient says thank you, most of the time, if you interview the person, and I've interviewed thousands of doctors, hey, tell me about an ideal patient encounter. When you know, a patient got into it, it was so fulfilling when you went home, you said to your spouse, hey, sit down. I got to tell you about what happened at work to me today. And you're riding a high for the rest of the day. Typically, it's a patient or a family member who said thank you to you. But typically, you were late.
Stressed.
It was at the end of the visit. You had your hand on the doorknob. Your back was turned to the family. And they said thank you from behind you. And it skips off your shoulder. You don't take it face on. So I'm going to recommend that the next time a patient says thank you, if you want to have your energy replenished to the maximal effect for this event, that you turn around, empty your hands, so put down the chart and the pen and everything, stand with your feet shoulder width apart and your palms facing forward, and say to that person, can you say that again? Now, that may seem a little outrageous to you. Only once have I ever had a patient not say it again willingly, because you made a difference to them or their family member. And they want to see the completion of the interaction. They want to see their thank you land. They want to see it hit. They want to see it have impact. So as they say thank you again, take a big breath.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And soak it up just like a huge love sponge. And then take another breath and say whatever you want back to them, but come from your heart, not from your head. Mavis, taking care of your mom has been a pleasure. It reminds me of why I became a doctor in the first place. Now get out of my office, and I don't want to see you again until your next regularly scheduled follow-up visit.
That's right. Excellent.
So leading by asking questions.
Important.
Saying thank you. And this is going to be the last one for today.
Yeah.
There's five main ones that I teach, but here's the interesting thing. It's a group version of saying thank you, right?
Oh.
So what ends up happening is groups usually are working projects, and projects usually have metrics. So let's talk about a project where we're measuring something and the starting point was a 10 and the ending point was a 20. And I'm coming into the meeting to give a progress report on the project and we've hit 14.
Yeah.
Now, when you think about 10, 14, 20, 10 is where we started, 14 is where we are, 20 is where we're going to end. There's two gaps.
Yeah.
The gap between 10 and 14 is progress.
Yeah.
The gap between 14 and 20 is typically called the gap. Now, when you walk into a progress meeting and that's where you are, what's the first thing the leader always does? Takes the gap and hammers the whole team with it. What's wrong with you people? We still got six to go. That kind of stuff. Saying thank you is part of a technique I call treat your people like dogs. Treat yourself like a dog. What do you do when a dog walks in the room? Do you slap him, kick him? No, you scratch his butt and you hope that he whines at you, right? Everybody treats dog great, right? So the thing about meetings is if you're running the meeting, celebrate progress first.
So important.
Celebrate progress first. If there's been no progress, celebrate effort first. So thanks everybody for being in the meeting. You know this project here, we started in 10. I'll be darned if we're not at 14. You people were trying to tell me we couldn't move that needle and we're at 14. This is awesome. Give somebody a high five. High fives all around the room. By the way, physical is memorable.
Yeah.
How did we get here? What are we doing that's making this difference? And how much farther can we push what we're already doing to make a bigger difference? Can we make it all the way to 20? No. Okay, great. So now that I've celebrated progress and patted everybody on, thank you so much for your hard work, because I know that it's in addition to the things that you normally have to do, right? This is all authentic from me.
Right.
I'm looking for an opportunity to say thank you. I'm looking for an opportunity to ask a question. Now I'm going to talk about the gap. You know, the project is set to finish when we get to 20. We know what we've done so far. We know how far we can push it. What else do you think we ought to be doing? How else do you think you ought to coordinate these steps? Who's got some new ideas? And I'm going to continue to facilitate that conversation by using my questions and thanking people for their contribution. And we're going to figure it out.
That's really positive and a good form of leadership. I agree.
And it's different than the way doctors learn how to lead. And remember, they were never taught how to lead.
Right.
Notice that I did not take a class in diagnose and treat, give orders, and expect obedience. I did not take a class. I've never met a doctor that did. They don't teach that as a leadership style. You absorb it from the environment.
Right.
And you know where it started? Back with the ancient Greeks. I mean, this is
really
ancient. I mean, this is like codified by the Austrian drug addicts who developed the modern residency experience. And Halstead and his crew that brought it to America. I have the knowledge. You're just a tool. I will make the diagnosis and give you orders. You will do exactly what I say. And patient, you'll do the same thing. That's so unbalanced and so top down and so command and control. It's just pretty much useless outside an OR where you're actually asking for an instrument to be passed to you.
Yeah, I understand that entirely. Yeah.
So we've talked a little bit about the ideal practice generator.
Exactly.
We've talked a little bit about manage your boss.
Right.
We've talked a little bit about leadership power tools.
Yep.
And the ones we have yet to say anything about is get home sooner, balance and boundaries, eye of the storm, and ideal physician job search formula. Now, it's interesting. In my community, Burnout Proof MD, I have all these video trainings in the library. Everybody in the community gets full access to them, and we do 2 hours of weekly coaching, 100 hours of CME for the first year. So we have a full support community that teaches all these missing skill sets. And I've been writing about them for years.
Yeah, we'll be sure to link that on the podcast text.
And what this does is it gives you the ability, and this is the important thing these days, because the U.S. healthcare industry, from the standpoint of the physician experience, is not healthy. 63% burnout rate. It's going to get worse because we're losing 400,000 boomer doctors between now and 2030. So the key is you have to work on your practice and not just in it.
Yeah.
Because if all you're doing is working in your practice, those conditions are going to deteriorate over time. And in some cases, it will deteriorate suddenly, especially when there's a merger or an acquisition that takes away a good leader and you're left with somebody who's either absent or clueless.
Well, thank you so much for your insights. I think we got a lot out of today, and I look forward to hearing about the other ones.
Well, and the take-home lesson too is this, the origin story, right?
Yeah.
Burnout has a highest and best use. That is to break your heart and force you to do something different. What does it force you to do? You're on somebody else's path and it's burning you out. What it forces you to do is to figure out what you really want and take a path that has more purpose for you,
yeah,
to the extent that you can create the wiggle room to find that in your current job. Now, it's interesting, especially for primary care, there is a popular, although not common, practice model that allows you to build exactly your ideal practice. And it's DPC, concierge medicine.
That does offer a lot more flexibility.
Which is why I have started at the beginning, and I'll say it again now. What I was talking about right now is strategy for a person who chooses to be an employee. And when you do that, you will always end up with a partial overlap with your ideal job description.
I see.
You'll never get much closer than 85%.
Right.
Nobody can get 100% inside an employee status because the organization will exert its influence in some way, yep, to keep you from 100. But you don't have to sit there and be burned out, because check it out. How to win, HTW, the second part of the strategy is where to play.
Right.
WTP, right? So how to win, where to play. If it doesn't work out here, knowing what your ideal job description is and having the tools of our job search formally allows you to function as a free agent. And in days gone past, it used to be that if you were needing a new job, you would have to change towns. You'd have to move. You'd have to pick up your kids. Right? And sell the house that's paid off. You don't have to do that anymore because there's so many virtual alternatives. It's just amazing. We have a member of our community, an emergency room doctor, who quit her emergency room job because she had a true psychopath boss. Oh my gosh. It was like she was the fly the person was pulling the legs off of every day. It was just horrible, right? And she went out on the job market, and you know what she does now? She works from noon to 8, 3 days a week, telemed in North Carolina for Kaiser in Oregon. She doesn't even have to dress from the waist down. And she's a natural born leader. So she, because they're rolling out this service new, she's in a leadership role. Every time she comes on, she says, you know what? I'm
going to
celebrate that the people I work with are nice. Because she's never been treated nicely before.
Heartbreaking.
You can find a better opportunity. And because of the things that are happening now in terms of virtual care and blended positions and all that kind of stuff, there's just so much creative new job descriptions out there. The challenge is going to be the people. Let's say that you used to have 8 family docs in your department, 3 retired, 1 quit. They're not going to give you any reinforcements. You know why? 4 salaries to take care of the same number of patients is much more profitable than 8 salaries to take care of that number of patients. And somehow you've got to be able to act together to say, we are going to quit if you don't get us some more people.
Yeah.
Because playing chicken is going to be one of the techniques we're going to have to perfect going forward. Either that or unionizing.
Yeah.
Did I say that?
No, you did not say that. I heard nothing.
I didn't say the U word. So what I'm trying to do is to, and I've been doing this for 14 years, I've been paying this forward as hard as I can for 14 years. If you choose to be an employee doctor, to give you the missing skill sets to be able to take back enough of your practice from the whirlwind of your job that you can find the satisfaction that gives you faith that your choice was still the right choice to become a doctor in the first place. Like that. Now I'm going to drop the mic.
Great. I think there's nothing else to do, but those are great words. Thank you so much, Dyke, for your time and insights. Really fantastic.
You bet. My pleasure.
And we'll talk again next month.
Now, just real quick, if you want to learn more about what we do, thehappymd.com. Got to put the word the on the front, thehappymd.com.
Yep.
Or come ping us at burnoutproofmd.com. You'll be on the front door of a private community. It's a subscription community. Knock on the door and we'll show you how you can come in.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Alrighty. Take care. Bye.
Yep.
That's all the time we have for today's podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe and stay healthy.
Stay tuned for our next episode as we are joined by top thought leaders to discuss the latest groundbreaking research presented at this month's top annual medical meeting. Physicians Weekly is produced in collaboration with Medicom Medical Publishers and Physicians Weekly.